Good morning, everyone. I am home, back in the office again, which is nice, the home office as it is. So that was about 3 weeks away. For those who followed me through that journey, I was in Sydney for a week doing workshops and things, in Canberra doing the Gov things, at the snow doing the snowboarding things, back in Sydney doing more workshops, and then wrapped it all up with a conference talk for the SailPoint conference in Sydney on Wednesday. So that was really good. And then, like, very, very coincidentally, I managed to time going to a, I don't think reunion's the right word. They use the word alumni, a school alumni thing. And most of you don't know this, but I actually went to school most of my teenage years overseas. So I went to school and finished year 11 and year 12 in Singapore. So it's kind of weird for me to have any sort of school reunion kind of thing because we're in a different part of the world. But anyway, I went to this Australian school there, and this Australian school, I'm going to obviously date myself here, but this opened in 93. So I went to this school in 93, and I was one of the first students there. In fact, we only had, I think, 32 of us on day one. And of course, now it's massive and there's people everywhere. So I went along to this thing on Wednesday night in Sydney, and I was saying to my wife before, like, this is going to be weird because just by virtue of when it opened and everything, I'm going to be like the oldest person there and people are just going to think I'm a teacher. So that was actually fun, and I knew absolutely no one, but I went and met some people and had some beers as we do at these things. And it was fun. So I made the most of the trip. So I drove home from Sydney to the Gold Coast yesterday, which is normally just under a 9-hour drive. But thanks to a number of people deciding to run into the end of each other, it became somewhat longer. Fortunately, I wasn't one of those people. But yeah, that was just a big, big drive yesterday. So I guess moving on to things, one of the things I've mentioned, and I know I'm not doing a very good job of this, but I am trying to reduce the travel a bit. I did the numbers today and I've been away 37% of the year, and that's going to hold true for about another month as well because I've got some Sydney and Melbourne events coming up week after next. So if you're in Melbourne, there's API Days. So I spoke at API Days years ago when it was in Sydney. I'm going to be doing an opening keynote for that in Melbourne, which will be good fun. And I'll share some details on the Sydney event later on as well. And of course, also in September, we've got NDC Sydney coming up, or NDC Australia, whichever way you put it. And as many of you know, NDC is consistently my favorite series of events of the year. So that'll be good. We'll have Scott Helm back down here as well. So Scott's going to come visit me here again. Incidentally, we're going to go war jet skiing. True story. So he's going to bring his pineapples and his GPSs and other bits and pieces. And we're going to do, I guess, like the geekiest possible thing he can do on a jet ski. I will not throw him off again whilst he has his Wi-Fi gear. We'll get that back on dry land. Then I'll throw him off. So anyway, if you've got any really interesting ideas for what you'd like to see in terms of war jet skiing, let me know. That's going to be fun next month. Now, moving on, a few different things I thought I'd talk about today. Obviously, I haven't blogged because I have been traveling and doing all that sort of stuff. But I got a couple little projects I thought I'd talk about. And then we'd talk about a data breach, which is, I think, frustrating is a charitable way of putting it. But we'll get to that. So a few little things. We are progressing with the Mozilla Firefox integration of Have I Been Pwned. We did a bunch of performance testing on this morning. I was very happy to see that no matter how much traffic we threw at Have I Been Pwned for the range search, which I've written about before, I'll link to it. No matter how much traffic we threw, Have I Been Pwned, and I guess in fairness, Azure Functions was just like, yeah, is that all you got? So it just kept going and going. So we well and truly smashed through the highest expected traffic loads. And we were doing, I've kept some notes here, about 5,000 requests a minute to the API, which allows you to search through the 5.2 something billion records in there at the moment. And the API just absolutely blissed it, no problems, because it's running on Azure Functions. So that's just, to be honest, more endorsement of how good Functions are. And I think I figured out it was using about 6 instances of the server, which is under the serverless architecture. Pro tip, serverless architectures still use servers, but it was using a very, very, very tiny fraction of what it could have. So it'd be interesting to see actually what would actually cause it to max out. And I'm not sure. What would go first? Would it be the function? It might actually even be the underlying table storage, but like we're scratching the surface of the performance as well. Incidentally, while I think of it, actually, I'm going to speak at .NET Conf, which is a virtual conference which is going to be running, I think it was the 14th of September. Don't quote me on that. Google it. I just saw an invite come in today for the meeting. But it is going to be around the middle of next month. So I'm going to be talking about how I've done the Have I Been Pwned things, and particularly some of the newer stuff I've done with functions and also with Cloudflare. So I'm going to talk a bit about that too. So that will be fun. I probably should start thinking about getting that presentation together. So anyway, the Mozilla thing's rolling along. I'll talk more about that as it actually goes live. So if you recall, they were beta testing it. That's all gone fantastically, which is good. And it will actually roll out to everyone in the public who wants to use it, which would be super, super awesome. So that was that. Now, something totally unrelated. I came home from this trip yesterday and there was a box of stuff waiting for me. And you might just be able to see it over to my right if you're watching the video. I'm going to try and pick this up without dropping it and show you what I've got. It's a very, very heavy, big stash of Ubiquiti bits and pieces. Now, there's a bunch more access points because apparently I need more access points. And also a switch. I believe there's some other stuff on the way. So many of you would have seen that I wrote about Ubiquiti a couple of years ago. Went and spent a fair whack of money actually setting it up in my house. And then I realized that it was totally awesome gear. And since then, I've written a few other bits, done some courses, and occasionally they send me some bits and pieces. And what I'm actually going to do is try and do a proper job of the network in my house. Now, my network is not for wanting. It certainly has plenty of connectivity and all this sort of thing. But basically, when we moved into this house, it had a switch built into a cupboard in the garage, which is, first of all, when you're looking at a house and you go, that house has got a switch and wired Ethernet to every room, that is a big selling point, for me at least. So that's cool. The thing is, though, it's a dodgy little switch. I'm actually going to put a photo on the screen now. I don't normally put other things on the screen. I'm going to put a photo on the screen and then I'll narrate it as well for the people listening. So I'm looking at the photos on my iPad here to explain it. You'll see there's sort of it's almost like a vertical switch and a patch board on the side of the wall. And there's a whole bunch of cables hanging out of it, plugged into a couple of Ubiquiti switches. Reason why is it's only a 10 megabit switch that's in there. And I guess it's meant for, you'll see there's some labels there for TV and other bits and pieces, which maybe didn't have high bandwidth requirements. So I've just sort of gone, okay, straight out of the patch board into the switches. And that has worked functionally well, but it's an absolute mess. And my networking requirements are increasing, not least of which because one of the things Ubiquiti sent me a while ago was a bunch of cameras. And I now want to get the cameras permanently installed around the house. That's going to have to run more Ethernet. And I'm just going, okay, look, screw this. Let's do it properly. Let's put in a server cabinet. So I'm just interested in people's ideas of what they think I should do. I'm probably just going to pull out all those boxes. One of them says Christmas decorations. We don't go into that a lot. Probably going to pull all of them out, put sort of a half-height server cabinet down in the corner. It's a relatively cool spot down there. I do want to make sure I have some airflow though, so I'm going to make sure there's a bit of room left on the top. Might even put a fan or two in whatever cabinet I end up buying. And then I'll actually be able to put a proper patch board in there, put that rack-mounted switch, possibly a few other rack-mounted bits and pieces, and then have plenty of room to expand as well. And inevitably, that will mean ripping things out of the wall and probably replastering that. And then taking all the booze. And I don't know, maybe putting some shelves or something up there. Anyway, if you have a look at that picture and you have good ideas about what I should be doing or what I really should put in the house, I'd love to know. When I first did my Ubiquiti install at home and I had no idea what all the bits were, I crowdsourced lots of information. You guys, as in the general public, were enormously useful with that, enormously helpful. So, pro tip, turn off sound on PC. You guys are enormously helpful with that, so I would really like to get that feedback again. I will link to the Ubiquiti builds I did. I did do one at my brother's house where he's got probably about a quarter height rack mount and or rather server cabinet. And it's just a beautiful build. I felt really jealous of his build, but He had the luxury of doing a big renovation and just getting to cable everything into exactly where he wanted it to be. So now I'm going to try and do the same thing. So do share your ideas on that. Now, moving on, let's talk about data breaches. And one in particular today, which is enormously frustrating. Now, let me just talk about the motherboard story here, and I'll link to the motherboard story. This is about a spyware company called SpyPhone. Now, this is one of these services where if you want to monitor other people, and I'm going to try and talk very, very generically here, then we'll talk about specific use cases. If you want to monitor other people and you have access to install this software on their device, you can install it onto whatever mobile device it is they have and monitor what they're doing. Everything from photos through to voice messages, through to browsing habits, through to passwords and things like this. Now, this is, I guess, the technical explanation. So this is what it does. Obviously, it requires device access. You have device access, say, to family members. So we have seen parents installing these on children's devices, and indeed, this is one of the value propositions of them. We have seen spouses install them onto their partner's device because they want to spy on them because they think they're having an affair or something like that. And inevitably, we've seen malicious use cases where someone who managed to gain access to a device but certainly has no reasonable right to be monitoring that person install it as well. Now, if we start to shift gear to where it all goes wrong, time and time again, we have seen these products exploited. And what I mean by exploited is just egregiously bad security on behalf of the software designed to spy on others. So, for example, and I'm going to try and pull up some very, very specific ones here. Have I Been Pwned, as of the time of recording, has two separate incidents of this sort of software. One of them is mSpy. mSpy got breached in May 2015. It's in my description here, I've said in May 2015 that monitoring, for those listening, I'm doing air quotes, monitoring software known as mSpy suffered a major data breach. Software allegedly used to spy on unsuspecting victims stored extensive personal information within their online service, which, after being breached, was made freely available on the internet. Not such a good outcome. Now, there was another one already in Have I Been Pwned, and this is Retina X. In February 2017, the mobile device monitoring software developer Retina X was hacked and customer data downloaded before being wiped from their servers. The incident was covered in the motherboard article titled Inside the Stalkerware Surveillance Market, where ordinary people tap each other's phones. My choice of wording there is a little bit cautious because after I loaded this into Have I Been Pwned, Retina X got in touch and was not happy about the way they were described. Interestingly enough, I've never had a company get in touch and be cranky about a legitimate breach having been loaded in to Have I Been Pwned. Everyone seems to be cool with that. But they didn't like the word stalkerware. I think I had sort of put the word stalkerware and then I went, okay, the motherboard article titled, and then it's like, they said stalkerware, go and complain to them if you don't like the term. Anyway, for Retina X, the service used to monitor mobile devices had 71,000 email addresses and MD5 hashes with no salt exposed. Retina X disclosed the incident in a blog post April 27, 2017. Now, the point here is that this is a pattern where software designed to monitor other people's usage of the device without their knowledge keeps getting owned. Now, in this particular situation with SpyPhone, someone contacted me last week and they said, hey, I've found a whole bunch of this data publicly accessible. You really want to know about this. Now, whenever this happens, there's sort of a process of verification, and I got enough information from this person to verify that, yes, this data was publicly exposed. And then, of course, there's the disclosure process because someone now needs to get in touch with this company and let them know. So particularly given I was away on holidays, in fact, this was when I was at the snow as well, and really trying to do family things, I went, look, can I connect you with a trusted reporter? So I connected him to Lorenzo from Motherboard, and this guy and Lorenzo went backwards and forwards and verified the problem. The way Lorenzo verified it, and I only realized when I actually read this today, and I'm going to read the paragraph here. Motherboard was able to verify that the researcher had access to SpyPhone's monitored devices by creating a trial account, installing the spyware on a phone and taking some pictures. Hours later, the researcher sent back one of those pictures. So imagine that the privacy implications of that, people's pictures being leaked publicly. They talk about an open S3 bucket here. They also talk about an API left publicly facing that has now been secured. I won't tell you the exact path, but imagine what path you would expect an API exposing users to be on. It was as simple as that. They also exposed some admin interfaces here as well, and the quote here in Motherboard was, the company's back-end services were also left wide open, not requiring a password to log into them, according to the researcher who said he was able to create admin accounts and see customer data. So basically, it was just kind of a big pile of fail all over the place. And the bit that I'm quite frustrated about, and I'm sort of thinking about whether there's an angle here for blog post as well, is who are the people running this software? And now I don't mean Spyphone, another discussion about the ethics of doing that, but who are the people actually installing this on their phones? If you're a parent and you're doing this to monitor your kids, you have got rocks in your head. Seriously, I mean, this is an absolutely ridiculous idea. And I understand how parents would feel inclined to install this. I mean, I've got kids myself who are now getting online, and I guess I just know enough about the risk to know that I would never actually do this to my children. But for your average everyday folks, and I think this is maybe where the angle of the blog post is, the risks you create by installing this on their devices is just absolutely astronomical, because we keep seeing all of this stuff collected, things like passwords collected, or photos, which when they're on something like an iPhone like this, are protected and encrypted in storage and backed up to cryptographically safe iCloud backups and everything protected by two-factor authentication. Hopefully you've turned that on, and strong passwords. And then you have a third party like Spyphone come along and go, we'll just capture everything we can and then we'll put it in the S3 bucket and then forget to put a password on it and expose it on public APIs. And it just blows my mind that we take fantastic modern secure devices and then we go, okay, now we're going to let this other company just monitor everything. If you're a spouse trying to monitor your partner, and I guess in fairness, I can't imagine what it would be like to be in a situation where you felt compelled to do that. Maybe it's a very highly emotional situation, particularly if there's, you know, like you think your partner's cheating on you or something like that. That would be a terrible situation, and maybe people do irrational things. But imagine your spouse's data and then the fact that you were monitoring them ends up in a breach like this. Because we've seen them happen enough times, you know, history would tell you that there's a good likelihood it's going to happen again with whatever software product it is you're using. So I don't quite know where to go from here other than just to go, well, why do we keep doing this? This will be the third one that goes in a Have I Been Pwned. The data's loaded already. I just got to flick the switch and make it live later today, so that will probably happen before this video goes live. I found 40-something unique email addresses in there. Sorry, 40,000-something unique email addresses in there. It seems like only a small number of them are actually from people who knew that they were using the service. And in fact, if I go and find Motherboard's quote just here, so the exposed data, I found 44,109 unique email addresses in the data that the researcher that found this sent to me. Apparently, there's at least 2,208 current customers and hundreds of thousands of photos and audio in each folder, is what the researcher said. So maybe there's like 2,200 customers, but then there's 44,000 email addresses because it ends up pulling people's contact lists and things like that. Which again feels really shitty, because you could be like a third party. The first party is the one that installs it on the second party's device, and the second party has these contacts in their contact list. And now that's spread all over the place as well. And it's just gobsmacked by both the companies that create this software and then people that end up installing it. So look, I don't think there's much more I can say on that. I'm going to load that data. There's going to be some people who get some very, very surprising emails now. Some people will go, yeah, okay, I installed this, and they'll know what it is. A bunch of people are going to get this, and they're not going to know why they're in there. And I won't have a good answer other than to say, contact Spyphone. Now, on that, because we're running really well for time, and I do have something tangential I want to touch on there. whether you put it under the banner of GDPR or whether you put it under the banner of just being a good corporate citizen. I would really like to hope that when a company like SpyPhone has a data breach, that they will support people whose data they have exposed. So if your email address is in the SpyPhone data breach, I would really like to think that if you get in touch with them and say, hey, look, my data was in there, it's popped up on Have I Been Pwned, I'd like to know what it is. And that company should be compelled to provide it. Particularly situations like Exactus. Remember Exactus last month? So this was one where there was like 130 million email addresses from a data aggregator, people on the podcast, I'm doing air quotes, data aggregator and enrichment service, and they exposed up to several hundred fields per person. They should be accountable for telling people what they've lost. That just seems absolutely perfectly reasonable, no matter where you are in the world and no matter what regulation you come under. I would really like to see people holding these organizations to account for that. And I'm not saying like necessarily go to town or legal on them, etc., but just say, guys, you exposed my data. I want to know what it is. If you do that, particularly if you're in this spy phone situation, please let me know, because I'd really, really like to know how that response from them goes. So that will go into Have I Been Pwned today. It'll just be another one of these situations. Okay, so last thing, blog sponsor. So Tech Fabric is sponsoring my blog this week, building scalable, reliable, and secure cloud-native applications. So Tech Fabric is another sponsor who's been there for quite some time, and I appreciate their support on this. I will also start planning out my sponsor setup for next year very, very shortly. I need to get better at the way I do this because everything sold out for 2018 in the space of about a week. I don't think sort of doing a year in advance is necessarily the right thing to do. And I don't think I'm very good at pricing it either if it sells out that quickly. So that's just one of the fun joys of independence and then trying to do things like this. So look, that's all for this week. I know it's a little bit shorter. I am home all of the next week, so hopefully I have a little bit of time to write some blog posts. I've actually got one in my mind that I started years ago that I'd really like to finish, and it's totally different to all of the normal stuff. I'm just not sure if it's going to resonate with a bunch of people or people will hate it or not, but I might just do it anyway and see how it goes, because it's something I'm a bit passionate about. So on that note, thank you very much for watching or listening. I hope you've enjoyed a slightly shorter one, and I'll come to you next week with a whole bunch of new stuff.